All right. Angie, welcome to the podcast. Angie Hung, who is a huge supporter of the podcast, which I'm incredibly grateful for. And we met because you are such a supporter of Kate Winslet's work. And I obviously am as well. And that's how we connected on Instagram. I feel like so many of the Titanic and podcast friendships that I've made have been on Instagram. So it's so valuable. And yeah, I asked you to come today to talk about one of my favorite Kate movies, and I found out that you like it as well. And it's holiday themed. We're obviously going to be discussing The Holiday. So maybe just kind of introduce yourself a little to people, quick bio. I'll make sure to put your Instagram handle in all the show notes and everything. But yeah, I mean, you're a podcaster too. You have a Kate Winslet podcast. It's called What Would Kate Do? So tell us a little bit about how that came about and who you are.
Yeah, sure. So thank you very much for the introduction, LA. And it was great meeting you online through Instagram. So yes, during the pandemic, even though we had nothing to do with the pandemic, I rediscovered my joy and love for acting after watching a few Kate Winslet movies and binging interviews with her about why she loves acting and why she adores the work that goes into it. And that really spoke to me in so many different ways. And because of that, I finally got my body back down onto the chair to get back into acting, get an agent. And so, yes, in addition to my regular job as a project manager, I'm also now an actor. And then how the podcast came about to be, it was only, I think, earlier in 2023, and I was talking to you, and I got a lot of encouragement from the Unsinkable Pod Master, LA Beatles, and you gave me a few links that really helped me in getting this podcast started. So my podcast is really just for fun. It's called What Would Kate Do? And it is about analyzing what Kate would do from an acting perspective, what we can learn from her in terms of all the choices she makes as an actress. And then also sometimes looking at how the movies that she's doing speak to the cultural and sometimes female themes at the time that the movie was released.
Yeah, I think I've listened to several of your episodes and they're very well organized. Every movie that you cover, you go down the plot points, and at every turn, you're analyzing kind of the acting choices that she's making and fitting them in the context, like you say, of when the movie came out, what point in her career she was at. So if you are someone like me who's just Kate Winslet forever, I highly recommend that people check out your pod. And you're a Canadian. You're joining us from Canada.
Yes.
So the Unsinkable community is international and continues to grow. And I sometimes take flack from the non-1997 movie people who say like, oh, so much content about the movie or about Kate or Leo. And I say, well, the podcasting is the Wild West. I can do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. So here I am. And this is what I love to do. And so, yeah. So today we're going to talk about Kate Winslet's turn in The Holiday. I wanted to, you sent some amazing notes and we're going to share them with everyone and some of mine as well. Where does this fall for you in the canon? Like if you think about your favorite Kate performances, where does this sort of rank just in general?
Yeah, if you go from like 100, which would be the best, most absolute best, and then all the way to zero, I think The Holiday would fall maybe about 75. So I definitely one of her very strong and very, very enjoyable performances. And I now looking at The Holiday from a completely different point of view, I definitely get more out of it than when I watched it when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I'm actually not into rom-coms at all. So now that I get to see this from a completely different perspective, more from a Kate perspective, and also more from an Ira Simpkins and being able to sympathize with her and relate to her, I definitely enjoyed it way more, even though it's probably maybe the ninth time I've seen it now. Mm-hmm. Like it always shows up right during Christmas time or during holiday time. So yeah. So in terms of the canon, that's where Kate falls and that's where this movie falls for me. How about for you?
It is, it's pretty high. I think, you know, our opening note to sort of jump into the conversation is about her using her real accent in this movie and how it is a modern rom-com, which is not something we've typically seen her do. She hasn't really done since. Mm-hmm. And for me, when this movie came out and Titanic and Kate and Leo Mania was still pretty fresh for me. I was in my, I guess, early 20s. What year did this come out? I guess I should have had that.
2006.
Okay. I was going to say 6 or 8. I should have looked that up. There's some real time mistake making on my part. But when this movie came out, so yeah, I was in my early 20s. I was still so in that mode that to see Kate Winslet in modern, these beautiful modern clothes. She's so gorgeous in this movie, to see her step out of the period films for a beat and do something mm-hmm. like this. I was giddy. I think I saw it 2 or 3 times in the theater. It definitely is a nostalgia bomb for me. I love rom-coms. I love holiday movies. So for me, it's just the perfect storm. And I would say it's probably my top 5 of films for her. And it just brings me so much joy. And that's, you know, like I would love to hear your take on why you think she took this role. And you have some very interesting thoughts about actors. You know, she's playing a very sort of down to earth and very normal character. She's going through a lot emotionally, but she's a pretty just average, normal, you know, journalist kind of living her life. Why do you think she took this role at this point in her career? I'm so curious, because you have done so much studying of her career arc and path.
Yeah, I think it reminds me actually of 2004's Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, where she was able to, again, get out of her, quote, they call it corset Kate, anyways, period Kate type of role. She probably just found it to be something fun that she could do, something completely different. I know that she's always said, I take roles because they scare me in some kind of way. And it probably did scare her because, as you said, LA, that she hasn't done this type of just a more lighthearted holiday rom-com. And to, yes, and great point about the fact that she is playing a character that almost, at least to a lot of Kate fans, seems a little bit even closer to Kate than like Kate in real life. And that is, as you said, she plays such a good down-to-earth person in this film. And it is so refreshing, again, because as someone who analyzes Kate's Kate movies, you almost feel like you are seeing Kate play a little bit of herself in this movie. Whereas, you know, even if you compare it to something like Titanic, you know that she's not a rose. Like, you know that she, you know, didn't grow up in such a privileged society. And so to see her play a character that goes through what a lot of women go through, which is falling for someone, thinking that you're going to be giving them all of you, and you don't get what you deserve back. So that was really, really refreshing, I think. And so I think she took this role for several reasons. It's fun. She loves acting, the work involved, but also she could use her real accent. She could probably be even more herself than she has been in the past. It's just a real movie showcasing real conversations and real relationships and real connections and developing those connections.
Yeah, it had to be sort of a fun relief to not be in a corset, to not go through, you know, hours of makeup or hair. I mean, she's just in these very casual but very elegant and sophisticated clothes in this movie. You know, the scene where she at the beginning, you know, so the movie opens and mm-hmm. we have discovered that in her timeline of the film, it's Christmas time, and she has been in this back and forth, on and off, horrid relationship with a man she works with, who she dated and fell in love with, and then he broke her heart, but wants his cake and to eat it too. So he wants to try to maintain the quote unquote friendship, torturing her, and she's unable to get over him. And like you said, I think for a lot of women, a lot of modern women, this is a scenario that happens. And the thing is, and we'll talk about it when we get to a specific scene, this totally happened to me when I was in my 20s. And 100%. And so when this when this plot sort of unveiled in this movie, I saw mm-hmm. so much of myself in the Kate character, which is part of the reason it means so much to me at this stage in my life. I was completely in a situation like this. And so it's obviously a Nancy Meyers movie. So it's hyper real and it's beautiful and everybody's got, you know, $10,000 couches. And so, but there are a lot of things that we can all relate to as women there as well. So you pointed out when she, in these opening scenes, when she finds out that, Jasper is not, the hope of being with Jasper is diminutive because he is now engaged to somebody else. There's a crying scene and she's, as you pointed out, it looks like she's really, really crying. What do you think? You're an actor. How do you, I've always been so curious because I'm not an actor and I never really have been unless you count middle school. How do you prepare for that? I mean, what is it like to make yourself cry and have to feel those emotions in such a way that you're garnering this physical reaction from yourself? Do you have any insight into that? How do you do that?
Yeah, for sure. So, great point about crying for real. And I just wanted to harp back on the fact that Kate also plays someone real because she doesn't even need to wear a lot of makeup, especially like in the opening of the movie. And yet she looks so fresh faced, so real, so beautiful. So I wanted to say that. And I think also even back then, the quote risk of taking of as a woman, being able to put yourself on camera with not much makeup and just being able to show whoever you are. I think back in 2006, it wasn't as popular as it may or may not be right now. Although we now live in a society with filters and things like that.
So digital makeup is such a thing now too. Sorry to interrupt, and but yeah.
Airbrushing. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So in terms of crying, like I would love to talk to Kate about how she gets prepared into such roles. I find that whenever there is a scene where the character goes through something really traumatic or really sad or anything that is completely relatable, you don't even approach it from, oh my God, it's a crying scene. You approach it more from, it's a scene where I'm going to have to show what it's like to go through that process of starting to realize in real time that, in this case, someone doesn't love you or doesn't respect you the way that you were so hoping. And to more focus it from starting at the beginning with the information that you have, not knowing you're going to maybe by the end of that scene, get to that point where you finally realize that you are not being respected. So I think going into a scene where you may or may not end up crying as an actor, you don't go into it from a, oh my God, it's an acting scene, or you don't even approach it from a, oh my God, I'm going to have to cry. It's more, oh my God, I'm going to have to show exactly what it means for anyone to have to go through that. And if that brings out the tears for real, that's beautiful. If it doesn't bring out the tears, it's also beautiful. Because we've also seen scenes in other movies with Kate where she actually is able to hold all the tears in, but it's still just as real because that's life. When we know that there is the real us inside and then there's the outward demonstration of what we feel we can or cannot show to others. And sometimes, you know, maybe our kids are around or our family are around. We're not in a situation where we can cry because we know if we cry, we might scare the people around us and things like that. So, but yes, I would love to talk to Kate about how she prepares for a role. There are two types of preparation. One is sometimes, and some actors do think of this as a cheating method, sometimes it's thinking back on your own life and have you ever gone through anything similar? So you kind of relate to the character. And and believe me, that actually makes it so much easier if you can relate to something or have something so similar happen to you. Because even as I talk about it now, I can feel myself like, okay, what would I'm already trying to like show you, okay, here's how Angie Hung would slowly get to that process of crying, right? But I'm not crying on this. And the other method is really empathizing and really just understanding and caring for that person's perspective. So maybe I've never, like this scene is, I think most of us have gone through similar experiences with being rejected. But sometimes as actors, we have to play roles where we have never thankfully gone through that type of experience. But just imagine whether it's a friend or whether it's anyone, a person that has to go through that, you can just bring that back, that pain for real. So that is another acting method, is where even if you haven't experienced it yourself, you're not thinking about it from your own lens, but you're thinking about it from any other human being lens.
Just empathy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the opposite end of that, I mean, in this movie, we see such a range of emotion from her. And I should probably say, you know, obviously if you've seen The Holiday, and I hope you have, otherwise go watch it before you listen to this, but, yes. But obviously there's two timelines in the film, Kate Winslet and she's going to meet Jack Black. And then obviously Cameron Diaz and Jude Law in the other, timeline. Now I'm a huge Jude Law fan. When Cold Mountain came out in, I guess that was 2006, around this time too, I mean, there were some real Jack Dawson vibes going on for me. I love Jude Law so much. I love Cameron Diaz in some roles, mm-hmm. and I very much admire her overall as a person. That timeline, she's not going to give as much love from us because we're focused on Kate. We probably will jump in and talk about it a little bit here and there. So we see this range of emotion from Kate in this movie, from this crying that we're talking about and this very raw emotion when she's sitting down and first is talking to Cameron Diaz's character about the home swap. And then we cut to her arriving in LA. And like you were mentioning to me, you know, she's arriving in this huge house from this little cottage that she lives in, and she's giggling and she's exclaiming and having these outbursts that are just so joyful. And so we also see this just raw joy from her and all this physicality, which I think it's so refreshing to see such a range in one performance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just really fun.
Like, oh my God, I'm going to tell everyone I know. Okay, even if you haven't seen The Holiday, even if you're not into rom-com, you just go to that one scene where Kate physically, she doesn't even say anything. So you don't even have to know English to see this scene. Mm-hmm, but she arrives at the house, and as she realizes that the house that she swapped with is like 1,000 times bigger than a little cottage. And as she takes in every single new room, like, you know, she opens the door and she's like this big hallway. It fills me with so much joy just to watch her completely take in every single room that she goes to. And if you notice in that scene, and so it is an amazing actor's guide. Yes, Kate, it's just all she's doing is exploring a house in LA. And every room, it brings something different to her. Like when she looks at the room with the, you know, with the huge TV and with the all like little DVDs and something. And
well, you had a good comment for that too. You were like, yeah. Why didn't they put Titanic in the DVD collection? You caught something I've never caught, which, and I have seen this movie probably a couple of dozen times. I've never caught this, but there is a copy of Enigma on the shelf, which was a 2000 movie that Kate was in.
Yeah. So I think probably putting in Titanic would have taken people out of their fourth wall just a little bit too much. But yeah, it was kind of cute that they put in another movie that honestly wasn't very it. I don't think it was viewed a lot by a lot of people. So not a lot of people.
I think it was a little bit of a bomb, if I'm remembering correctly. And there's, you know, I talked about it on my retrospective a little bit that I did a couple of years ago. But I, you know, there's a couple of movies in the early 2000s that I mean, she's great in, but just sort of flew under the radar and didn't really perform. You know, All the King's Men is another one. And that movie has some issues. Well, that's another podcast. But I'm from Louisiana. So if you ever want to do an episode on that for your podcast, I will totally come and talk about Huey P. Long and what that movie is based on. It's wild. But
oh my God, yes.
she's playing this, as you put it, you kind of called it nice and innocent. She is. She's going through a lot emotionally, but we get the sense that her character is just a nice person, that she really means well. She is mm-hmm. kind to all of her friends. She really is trying to just make it in the world, do her job, have friends, mm-hmm. try to have a relationship. She's like all of us. She just is trying to be a good person and get through life. And she's very good at playing almost a blank slate in that way, because I think in this movie, we are supposed to almost be able to put ourselves into her shoes. And this is where we meet Miles, played by Jack Black, you know, around this point in the movie. And I want to talk about something that's, I told you about it. It's been driving me crazy the last few years. It's been very popular on film podcasts for people to do rewatches. You know, there's the Rewatchables, which is a very well-known podcast and a lot like it. And whenever I've listened to episodes on the holiday, there seems to be a big trend of even though it's a beloved holiday classic at this point, there's a big trend among film people to, you know, go back and say, oh, is this movie as really as good as we thought it was? Let's reexamine this. I hate that trend. And there is this backlash against Jack Black in this role. And I've heard several well-known podcasters say something along the lines of, oh gosh, you know, Kate Winslet is so stunning and brilliant and wonderful. Why did she have to end up with Jack Black in this movie? And I for the life of me, I don't understand what movie they're watching, because he is cute as a button. He's considerate and sweet, polite. Yes, he's going through this weird, you know, kind of on and off again thing himself with an actress he's dating, but he adores her and spends quality time with her and loves singing with her and respects her. And then ultimately at the end makes the right decision to prioritize her. So what is wrong with that? Like it blows my mind that that has sort of become one of the cultural dialogues about this movie. I don't get it at all. I'm so floored.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's interesting because if this movie came out in 2006, the internet and social media maybe wasn't as prevalent as it is now. Now it's so easy to see any kind of flippant comment. And yes, I've also read the same thing as how, you know, everyone says, oh, I love The Holiday, except for the fact that how can someone like Kate Winslet, you know, go for someone like Jack Black? But I also think because people know Kate from her whole myriad of movies, including from Titanic and movies where she's very dressed up. But imagine if Kate was just in this movie, The Holiday, in her very first film role. It could be that people would think, oh, okay, here's a nice, pretty, fresh-faced actress. And yeah, we can see her going for Jack Black. I think there's a little bit of people putting, knowing how she looks like in other roles where she is incredibly glamorous and putting her into this. Because she does look, thank God, look as simple and fresh as Iris is in this mm-hmm. role. Mm-hmm. And then I have to admit, like, as someone who has a crush on Kate Winslet. I can admit that on your podcast, right?
Oh my gosh. If you don't have one, get out of here.
Yeah. I'm like, can people read
only
it?
People are allowed that do. So you have to.
I'm like, so I'm going to add a little bit of hopefully in a more humorous way. I do, even when I watch it now, and I completely agree with you, LA, is if someone is treating you with that much kindness, it makes them beautiful. It makes them attractive. It makes them the type of person inside and out that people fall in love with. And that's what people are missing, is that Miles, the character, is genuinely a good character. And he is also going through a similar treatment and not being respected as Iris, Kate's character is. There, even though with the last time I viewed it, I was like, it is so hard sometimes to be like, oh my God, I'm so jealous of Jack Black. Like, and I don't even say I'm so jealous of Miles. I'm like, I'm so jealous of Jack Black. Like this actor who I think, I'm not really familiar with his work, but I'm like, oh my God, if I was any person, male, female, or whatever, I would instantly say yes to play a role where basically I get to treat Kate's character with complete kindness and be able
and
to
fall in love with her. Yeah.
So for me, if for someone like me, if I ever even jokingly say, oh my God, how can she fall in love? Completely out of jealousy. Like, I'm like, oh my God. Like, and yes, it is true that he does make the right decision and stuff like that. But there's another thing I thought. If they had cast someone who is more traditionally good looking from a male perspective, you know, someone with like a ripped body and things like that, I don't think it would have advanced the story as well as it does, because Kate's ex-boyfriend or whatever, the guy that's trying to keep her in his life, Jasper, he is more of a traditionally good-looking guy. I don't know, you may or may not agree with that. And
I think most people would agree just in general, more like Rufus, he's tall, he's got like the cheekbones and
I do notice his gorgeous eyes. It's, I think his first name's Rufus, of that actor. I'm just trying to remember. Oh, by the way, Kate used to date him as well.
Yeah, Rufus Sewell, and they used to date. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But I thought that they needed someone that is not traditionally from a male, like when you're looking at the at males, isn't one that is traditionally good looking, because that's the story they were trying to tell, that she's not going to be falling for another quote unquote, oh, that typical ripped, beautiful boy. She's being attracted to a person. So I think it might not have come, the story might not have come across as real if they had cast someone that looked more like a Rufus Sewell than a Jack Black. I don't know if you, any thoughts about that?
No, I completely agree. I think the arc of the character is such that she has fallen into the trap of worshiping, you know, this man that doesn't respect her, the Rufus Sewell character. And he is, and again, some of this is playing off of stereotypes and tropes, but this is what movies do, because in an hour and 45 minutes, they have to tell you a story, you know? And so I think part of the arc of the character is that she has fallen into the trap before of, oh gosh, you're so handsome, you're so brilliant, and you must be. Yeah. And I think as women, at least in the US, like growing up, like that's what was, we were sort of brainwashed in through culture to think that, right? That like the man of your dreams is going to be this tall and elegant, beautiful journalist who, you know, goes into an office and wears a suit and whatever. But her arc is realizing not only that it's about her being confident in herself and being, you know, we'll talk about the leading lady line in a few minutes, but being confident in herself and being a strong woman, and that if she also happens to meet this adorable, sweet man who respects her and treats her well, and she's kind of giddily falls in love with him, that's just icing on the cake. And I think part of the, yeah, part of the arc of her story is realizing that she could fall in love with someone who's not, you know, traditional Cary Grant handsome, and that's okay. And, you know, I, for me, when I was, you know, before I got married and I was more kind of in the dating pool, this is often the trap that I fell into. My husband's very handsome, though that's not to say he's not, but he's also, he is, but he's also like very goofy. And he's more handsome in kind of a mountain man way. He's got a big beard and, but you know, not what someone would fill in the blank as like, here is your dream man, you know? And so I do think that that's part of the arc is like, hey, listen up, ladies, like you gotta expand, widen your net here, because there are, you know, if you're just falling for like Ken, you know, for a Barbie reference here, but so yeah, I do think that casting him, that was definitely the aim. I agree 100%. I think Jack Black is so funny and adorable. I've never watched a ton of his movies. I've seen a few here and there. But he, when he does all of the movie music in this movie, and he hums things and sings things to her, I'm like, I think I would fall in love with that. That's adorable, you know? Oh.
Absolutely. And it, actually, just speaking of Jack Black in preparation, I do remember Kate saying that she started watching some of his movies, I think, before she did this movie with him. So in terms of preparation, I think just even out of respect for another actor that you'll be working with, right, and not necessarily getting into character for your own role, just knowing what an actor has done before and being able to have those conversations and respecting that. So yeah, Kate did watch some of Jack Black's movies before doing The Holiday to show that, hey, I've seen some stuff that you've been in. So.
Yeah, no, I think I've never been an actor, but I would imagine that's probably a really crucial thing to do in the weeks leading up to working with someone new. You know, if you have the chance to watch some of their previous work and get a sense of it. And, you know, this, we haven't even mentioned the fact that this movie is so meta in the sense that it's taking place in Hollywood, or at least her timeline is taking place in Hollywood. It's very much about the movies and rom-coms in this kind of meta way, because she meets her older neighbor who she befriends, and she walks into his house and he's got his Oscar there. Yeah. please tell me, if you don't mind, tell listeners what you shared with me about what your thought was in that scene where she walks into Arthur's home and he's got the Oscar.
Oh, so again, from to just watch Kate play a role, and as she's starting to slowly, very respectfully explore this older man's house, And she starts to see all his writing work and things like that and start to realize that, oh my gosh, he is a big deal. She turns around and she sees on the shelf and it just kind of stops her. She sees his Oscar. And at that time, Kate had not received an Oscar. I think at that time she received something like 5 Oscar nominations, but no win. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wondered what was going through in her head when she was actually looking at the Oscar on set while they were filming the scene. And it is with this adoration, but also as if it's this big unreachable thing. And then it turns out 2 years later, she would finally win her first. Mm-hmm. And so far, only Oscar for another movie.
Which blows my, I may get too worked up if we talk about that. So yeah. I mean, honestly, I think she should have 3 or 4 at this point, but that's just because I have a very specific viewpoint.
Yeah, I'm just going to say one thing. Like every time now I look at Kate, including in The Holiday, I'm thinking, oh my God, she won it for The Reader, which is not one of my favorite movies in terms of an acting perspective. Mm-hmm. So I would, and I'm even, okay, it's a rom-com, I get it. But honestly, with Kate's performance, it's just so real that I'm thinking like, it, depending on the other movies that came out in, I think it would have been in 2007 for the 2006 year, that, yeah, I'm thinking, oh my God, she probably deserved one even for The Holiday.
She might have gotten, I'll have to look it up. This definitely screams to me, might have gotten a Golden Globe nomination. This is definitely like a Golden Globe-y type of movie. So I wonder if maybe she got a nomination for that. Yeah, it really is, you know, to me, I mean, you know more than me, but it seems to me that in this period, like 2005 to 2010, it's very formative for her, not only because she, you know, finally wins an Oscar, you know, but it just, I don't know. I feel like she's trying on a lot of different things in mm-hmm. roles that she's picking. And mm-hmm. she's really kind of saying to the audience, I want to challenge myself with roles that are about a very diverse group of women. They're all women that, as you point out, are struggling with something or suffering in some way, and are relatable in some way, even if the plot is some sort of hyper real or some sort of historical moment that we can't necessarily relate to directly. But all of these women are going through, like, my favorite Kate Winslet performance besides Titanic, I really have finally realized, is Little Children. And mm-hmm. I have such a relationship with that movie, which is weird because there's not really a character in that movie that I specifically identify with for any, you know, tangible reason, but I think it's such an underrated film, such a well-done movie. And I don't think people talk about it enough anymore. And I think she should have won the Oscar for that performance. And I will die on that hill. I think that's really one of the ones she should have won for. Anyway, we've gone on a tangent, but
yeah, that's okay. Like I know this particular episode is not about Titanic. I actually thought she more deserved an Oscar for Titanic as Rose than she did for Hannah Schmitz as The Reader. But anyways, that's for another whole other conversation.
Yeah, no, I mean, but I agree too. And I think, you know, now with the Oscars, so much of what they do, and I think in some way they always have rewarded the people that are just in the cultural zeitgeist. And I think at that moment in time, she was 100% in the cultural zeitgeist and delivered mm-hmm. this iconic historical epic performance. I think she should have. And the fact that Leo wasn't nominated, I don't necessarily think that he should have won, but the fact that he wasn't nominated is, I mean, I still, I have never gotten over that. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So then we get to, so she meets Arthur and we come to my favorite part of the whole movie, which is where they're sitting at dinner because she does this lovely thing of noticing that he seems a little bit alone. It's very obvious he has a caregiver in the home, like a nurse or something that helps him make his meals and that sort of thing. But he doesn't have, his wife has died. He doesn't have a companion. And so she invites him to dinner. And he goes and they sit at this beautiful restaurant and they have like a Pilsner and a nice cold glass. And they're talking, and all of a sudden Arthur says, basically calls her out and says, mm-hmm. you're acting like the supporting character in your own life. You're supposed to be the leading lady of your own life. And I will tell you this line, I can still remember the, you know, sitting in the theater and hearing it for the first time. It completely helped me as a woman and as a person. I think I went through periods when I was younger where I was doing the same thing. I was totally acting like the supporting character in other people's lives to try to be cool, to try to, you know, date the right people, do the right things, do what I thought I was supposed to. And we haven't really actually talked about it. Did that line stick out for you the first time you saw it? For me, it's like the crux of the movie, but how was did you kind of feel the same way? Or was that just kind of one of many moments in the movie that mattered?
I think for me, it was one of many moments. And the first time I did listen way more carefully and watch more carefully in that line was when you told me that it was the line that impacted you the most. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting on this rewatch as they started the scene in the diner, I'm thinking, oh my God, this is it. This is LA Beatles. This is it, right?
Yeah, defining moment. Kind of same thing.
But here's what I loved about it. And this is more about the relationship, though, between Arthur and Iris. I like the fact that you can have a genuine friendship between two people that are of such massive age difference. And there's nothing wrong with it. There is no insinuation that there's anything beyond just a completely true, real friendship. So when he finally does say that and you can probably tell me the exact quote about you should be a leading lady in your own life, because it's coming from someone with so much experience in the film and someone who genuinely loved his wife and respected her the way that she probably deserved. I think that also added to the strength of that line, because it came from, it wasn't a woman that said it. Hey, well, it wasn't a older woman to a younger woman saying you should be the leading lady of your life. It is coming from a man. And I actually felt that makes it stronger, because it is, in a way, Iris is finally getting that love is not the right word, but that realization that she is such a strong, good, independent, beautiful soul inside and out. And it's coming from a man in this case who happens to have a lot of life experience. And so it is legitimate. So yeah, anyways, that just kind of came to my head. But
yeah, I think it's important that it comes from a male character, because she's been in this haze of this one man who she's obsessed with that doesn't respect her, and this constant back and forth. Or the way that that's intro'd at the beginning of the film makes it seem like they've been doing this for a year or more, maybe this kind of back and forth of, well, we'll just be friends, but we flirt and we email and we go to lunch, whatever. And this horrible cycle that she's been in. It's important that this line comes from a man that looks at her. And again, it's not in any creepy way. Like, they obviously are just building a friendship and he respects her, but he says, you're a leading lady. You're gorgeous. You're brilliant. You're like, why do you not understand these things about yourself? You know? And that's the journey that the character is on. I think, it's this pivot moment for her. And she talk about acting. It's great acting in that scene. And she sort of processes the line, and she kind of looks down at the table and looks around, and you can see tears a little bit welling in her eyes. And she says, yeah, you're supposed to be the leading lady of your own life. I think she says, God damn it, at the end.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I felt the same way at that point in my life. And it was so powerful. And she builds, she's in LA building these relationships with these two men she meets, completely different ages, different points in their lives that they're at, but she has these gorgeous friendships developing, and she doesn't think that anything romantic is going to happen with Jack Black. He's got a girlfriend, they're not doing anything inappropriate. But she's confidently building these friendships, and that's important for her character as well. And, you know, it's funny, we shared some notes, and you pointed out that when she's helping to get Arthur in shape and there are those scenes where they're in the pool and they're working out, that just looks like Kate. And seeing her like just in like the very elegant black bathing suit, with her hair in a knot, and she's just kind of hanging out with Arthur. I remember having the same thought even the very first time I saw it. That just looks like what it looks like to get to hang out with Kate.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I've had the privilege of pretty much reading or looking at every single interview that Kate's done, but also looking at interviews from people who have worked with her and interacted with her or who have met her. And they all say the same thing. She has this amazing sense of humor. like obviously very down to earth, but the fact that she can laugh at things that are funny, but also maybe are goofy type of funny, or things that, you know, maybe in a very proper society, you shouldn't be laughing at, but she's able to laugh at that. And I think she brings out herself while she's helping Arthur, including that scene where he's trying to walk with his walker and she uses her foot to slowly
it's
in the background.
Such a good little smile. Yeah.
When she was doing that, I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute. That's Kate. I actually had to like, oh, no. That's Iris. That's the character. But I actually, for a brief millisecond, I thought, oh, that is definitely Kate. So, and yeah, as you probably know, she loves water. She has said many, many times she loves water. She's so comfortable with water. And so yeah, to see her be able to use these strengths and use them in a character is also really awesome to see.
Yeah, and it, you know, and here's where I'll briefly touch on, you know, anyone listening, here's the backstory. As Angie and I were talking before we recorded, and I was telling her that I love Cameron Diaz. I love her wine she makes now. I was telling Angie, like, now she has Abilene, the wine company. I respect her career. I think she's beautiful. I think she's had a very smart career and made some really good choices. And, but this, to me, one of my only hangups with this movie is I think she's a little bit of a miscast. Obviously, Iris and Amanda are two completely different characters, but it's so weird to see, you know, an actress like Kate Winslet, like you're saying, embodying this very down-to-earth role, pulling off this broad range of emotions. And then Cameron Diaz, her character seems very, the way she plays the character, she's supposed to be a little stilted because she's supposed to be unfurling and letting go, but it's a little too clinical. It's a little too cold. Then she's got they have her in the harsh bob haircut. It doesn't work for me, even though I love the movie up and down, and I do still watch her scenes. I mean, the movie itself is, I think, just a holiday masterpiece, but So to me, whenever we get back to the Jack Black scenes or to the scenes with Arthur, that's when the movie really is gentle and comfortable. And I love these little smiles and smirks that we get from Kate. And, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say I do agree with you. And I've been thinking about this more, is that even on this rewatch that I just did a few days ago, especially not until the very, very end of the movie when Cameron finally realizes who she wants, I feel like, the character, like her character, when you really think about it, people are like that. It should be a real believable character. But yet when Cameron plays her, it feels like her acting in this movie is very over the top, very caricature. And I feel like it is more of a, you know, when people are really like ditzy, the reason if it works is because they truly are ditzy. They're not trying to pretend that I'm ditzy. But it felt like it was, especially like the first 80% of the movie, I felt like Cameron Diaz's character, Amanda, was just a fake ditzy kind of thing. And it didn't click to me. To the same thing as you said, whenever they got to the Miles and Iris story, I was completely focused and completely into it. Whereas when they got to the Amanda and Graham story, other than how beautiful Jude Law is, I almost felt like, oh, okay, here's my break, because it's not even a serious scene.
I'm going to go to the bathroom. The only caveat to that is, Jude Law as daddy. Yes, I will go there. When the scenes when she goes to the house and, you know, she meets his kids that are a surprise and he's like getting hot chocolate spilled on him and he's like, he's daddy. I mean, melt to the floor. You know, those scenes are some of my favorite in the movie. I do think of their storyline, those are the most fun. And she's a little more down to earth in those with her scenes with the child actors. Overall, it doesn't work, because Jude Law is another actor and I've followed his career for years. He's so organic. He's so down to earth and natural. He's so great with his eye expressions, his mouth expressions. Cameron Diaz is a good actor. I've seen her in roles where if the character clicks, she's excellent. So this is certainly not me, you know, being negative or saying she's not a good actor, but I just, for this role, it didn't feel like quite the perfect perfect fit.
Yeah, like because as I watched the movie, knowing and experiencing as an actor now than when I did when I was young, I see completely different things. And yeah, it's true that at least in this film, I didn't quite believe the character of Amanda. Again, it seemed like an over-the-top
caricature. Yeah, it just wasn't. Yeah, which I believed the character of Graham. I believed the character of Iris, you know, of what is Jack Black's character? Oh my gosh, I'm blanking. What is his? Miles. And you know, to further drive home that point, and this is in your notes, and I should let everyone know, like basically Angie and I had all the same thoughts about this movie, which is why we're talking about it.
I was like, check.
I was like going down notes, I'm like, check. But you know, when she has this big monologue towards the end to Miles, about, she kind of finally admits to Miles why she came to LA, what she's getting over, how she's working on herself. And this monologue that she has where she brings him the vodka and then he's like, oh gosh, I think you need this vodka. But she's basically like verbalizing what we all go through in our head when we do go through a heartbreak. And it's so powerful, but also so relatable. And there's a little tinge of humor to it. Mm-hmm. And it just, I don't know, it you sort of settle into that scene like you would like a hot cocoa. You know what I mean? It's like it's,
oh my God, it's
so good.
It's so beautiful. Like I actually on this rewatch, and again, I don't think I've ever cried at the holiday before in terms of all the other times I've seen it. But now looking at it from a different perspective and from the person I am now, I saw the whole monologue and then I had to rewind it again just to, again, did Kate Winslet really take us through that story in real time? Right. I think one of the toughest things as an actor is that you know the full story when you begin telling the story because you've already memorized your lines. You know it. You know what your character is going to think about at the end. But she's somehow able to, when she's telling Miles about how she knows what it feels like to not be the leading lady in your own story, the way she starts out, she somehow manages to start out in real time, not even though as an actor, you do know all your lines, but not even caring about what those lines are coming up is because you're telling the story in such real time. And that, so the reason I watched it twice, just so you know, is that it actually made me tear up watching that scene. And I think it's because the story she's telling is very relatable in terms of, you know, like I certainly have been through very similar experiences and emotions, but I almost felt like as if Kate was telling me the story because it was just so real. Mm-hmm. It was a real telling of it. And it was as if she was so being the character from the second that she started to the second that she finished without ever anticipating the thought or the word that's coming up right after. And I think that is the mark of a truly, truly good actress. I'm so glad that they cast Kate as Iris and they didn't flip it around. But that being said, I think my respect for Kate Winslet's acting, I would have loved to see how she would have played Amanda's character.
Yeah, I think she could have played either, to be perfectly honest. I think that she really could have, which is just a testament to her range. But I am glad. Yeah. It was so refreshing to see her in this very soft role. We oftentimes have to see her in movies going through such a harsh processes and such harsh emotions and true suffering, intense suffering. So it was nice to just see her in like a beige cardigan.
You
know, like with soft light makeup on and just like feeling real human emotions. And I you noted it too. I love, you know, at the end when she says, I like corny, I think I'm looking for more corny in my life. And that's, you know, it sums up her character's journey that she's going to embrace the corny. And that also, that line actually makes me tear up sometimes because I feel like one big growth that I've had in my life as an adult, especially since having kids, is realizing that it just doesn't matter who thinks you're cool or what cool is. Like, corny is great. Like, things you obsess about and love are great. Like, let your freak flag fly. I mean, yes,
absolutely.
And I think, you know, it's one of the great realizations of getting older and really maturing, at least it has been for me, is realizing corny is good. Like, there's already so much negativity in the world, unfortunately. Why put more in it? You know, corny is great. Yeah. Fun is great. Joyful is great. And if something makes you feel cheesy and giddy, then that's the thing you should be spending your time with and doing. And she's been in this brooding mode. And now, thanks to this holiday, she's going to be in her corny era. And I love it. It's such a good, such a great message in a rom-com.
And when you look at that line, like, I'm reading that line on my text and it looks so plain. I like corny. I'm looking for corny in my life. But until an actress like Kate takes those words off the page and says it. So I ask all of your listeners, and another scene to really pay attention to is how Kate says that line. It makes it so real, but that's why it also made me tear up as well. I think in a lesser actor's hands, that line itself could be actually corny, but it's not corny in this case. It's just because it just made me, you see through her eyes and her emotion, you actually see in just one short line, that pain and that ultimate redemption that she's probably processing in her mind as she's saying it. And because we get to finally see it, one freaking line that could be so corny itself, but Kate nails it and it's not corny at all. And it makes it so relatable. But that's only what a truly good actor, which honestly I'm not at the point, but one day, maybe when I get there, I'll be able to say such a line.
And oh, I bet you could.
As real and not corny. Thank you.
It's always, and again, I'm the furthest thing from an expert, but when I think about who my favorite actors are, men or women, I think that organic, relatable, that there are scenes in movies where I can just see in their eyes that they are not only committed to the role and committed to trying to tell a story, but I can see their humanity, you know, and that's really what it's about when I have a favorite actor. And yeah, this movie is just holiday joy. It's about when, like, you know, and I'll credit you for this phrase, the way you said it is, you know, it's about women finding men that they actually deserve. But the men could be taken out at the end. And it's also about these women finding the versions of themselves that they deserve and having confidence in themselves. They each kind of make this big leap to go somewhere totally crazy for the holiday and leave their lives behind. And so I think part of it is they're ready for a new, to use the word era too much, I guess Taylor Swift's in my brain, but you know, they're ready for a new era of their life and they're trying to figure out how to do that. And it's just really fun. And if anyone listening is, I know some people listening are, if you're in Austin, which I used to be, the Alamo Draft House there, which is a great chain of theaters, every December, they bring it as part of their repertory screenings and they do like a themed brunch and they show it. So if you're in Austin, please go see it for me because the first year I won't be able to do it in like 5 years. We both agree. This is just Kate in pure joy. And it's so lovely to be able to see her, that end scene when they're all dancing on New Year's Eve. It's so happy and she looks so gorgeous. And it's, to me, it's just a very iconic Kate imagery.
You're making me want to watch The Holiday again right now.
I will definitely be watching. I'm actually going, that's why this was on my brain to do. I'm actually going this Saturday to see it. The Atlanta Symphony Orchestra is doing the score and playing the score.
God, where is this? And how do I book the flight?
Come on. It's in Atlanta. And I have a very, very close friend that lives in Decatur, which is just outside of Atlanta. So we're going to do a little, we're moms. So we're going to get some kid-free cocktails and then go see it. But yeah, every year I watch it probably 4 or 5 times, but I have this rule with myself that I cannot watch it except in December. It's the only month of the year. okay. that I let myself.
Okay.
But yeah, well, this was amazing. I feel like we sort of covered everything we talked about. I think we both agreed coming out of it that the big theme here is female empowerment, which obviously Kate is a huge proponent of, and so much of her work and stuff that she supports in her personal life is about that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you were touching on, like even the fact that both characters, so both Kate and Cameron's characters, they do take that risk of doing something on their own, right? Doing something that doesn't involve a man, but just involves them taking an adventure on their own. And the fact that they both took that risk and both found amazing, completely real good things about themselves, but also about, and also obviously finding other people as well. That's just so beautiful. So I think that's a great message as well. You know, I'm not always a proponent of, quote, running away from your problems, but at the same time, I felt in this case, they both, I mean, obviously as part of the story, they both needed to be independent women and be independent first before being in the right mindset, ready to see the beauty in themselves. And then finally being able to find, which led them to finding the right gentleman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sometimes running away from your problems overall, not the best idea, but I do think there are some junctures in life where getting away for a little bit can help to clear your brain, you know? And I think that's what each character was thinking is, wow, I've really reached a breaking point. My mental health is not good. Like what can I do to try to reset, try to kick myself back into gear, which I think sometimes you do need. I know I definitely need that sometimes, especially as like a mom of young kids sometimes.
Oh my gosh.
Like,
yes.
I mean, usually about once a year, I just, you know, go with a friend and go somewhere kid free. And I always call it like my mom, like mama needs this trip for her mental health, but
awesome.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's like a fantasy. We all have this fantasy that we just, I just escape my regular life for a couple of weeks and what would happen, you know? And it's,
yeah.
So it's fun to think about that. Well, lovely. This was so fun. Now I'm thinking we've got to keep doing this. I'm sure listeners love Kate, so I'm sure they would not care if we did a few more Kate movies in the future. But thank you so much for your insight. This has been so much fun.
Yeah, no, thank you. I just love the fact that we agree on things. And then I also like the additional insight that you add from your perspective, also because of the experiences that you've had. And also the fact that I totally admire the fact that you even started your Unsinkable podcast.
Thank you.
So whenever I listen to your podcast, I usually see one theme that runs through it is the fact that it has brought so many new good people and good experiences and good revelations in your life just by starting a podcast that, hey, I'm sure when you started it, people thought it was corny.
Yeah. But talk about 100. That's exactly right. I mean, I have no shame in admitting that even a few close friends of mine who are, you know, in general, very supportive people in my life, just because I think we're all wired this way, you know, when I told them that this was what I was going to do, I kind of got a look of, okay. You know, like I think they were a little skeptical, which that's their prerogative if they want, but you know, it was definitely a choosing corniness kind of moment. And it's been very rewarding. And I've met people like you. I would never met you or become friends with you if I hadn't started this podcast.
And I'm so thankful for that. So thank you for your corny and Unsinkable podcast, especially the one about the Kate Winslet retrospective.
And I know, and I've got to do another one. It's funny. I was going to do a second Leo retrospective, but then I saw Killers of the Flower Moon and couldn't get it off my brain. So that just sort of turned into a review of Killers of the Flower Moon because it's so good. But yeah, I'm gonna have to like come back for part two at some point, and I will definitely need your help. All right. Awesome. Well, speaking of kids, I'm going to go pick up my kiddos, but this has been so much fun, Angie. Thank you so much. And anyone listening, I'll make sure to put all of your info in the show notes as well.
Agree. Thank you so much. It was awesome. It was fun. And let's do it again for sure.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Perfect.